Our reading is taken from Romans chapter 8, beginning to read at verse 18. Present suffering and future glory. I consider that our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us. For the creation waits in eager expectation for the children of God to be revealed. For the creation was subjected to frustration, not by its own choice, but by the will of the one who subjected it, in hope that the creation itself will be liberated from the bondage to decay and brought into the freedom and glory of the children of God. We know that the whole creation has been groaning, as in the pains of childbirth, right up to the present time. Not only so, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for our adoption to sonship, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. But hope that is seen is no hope at all. Who hopes for what they already have? But if we hope for what we do not yet have, we wait for it patiently. In the same way, the Spirit helps us in our weakness. We do not know what we ought to pray for, but the Spirit himself intercedes for us through wordless groans. And he who searches our hearts knows the mind of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for God's people in accordance with the will of God. And we know that in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. For those for whom he was predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. And those he predestined, he also called. Those he called, he also justified. Those he justified, he also glorified. Here ends the reading.
Well, thanks, Roger. Just a short reflection on that, to set the sort of context of our service here this morning. Paul begins by saying he recognises the sufferings that the church are going through. And there's little doubt that that suffering is persecution in any shape or form. And they're trying to form a new way forward through the Hebrew faith. So they're largely being persecuted by the Jewish people who were resistant to who Christ was, primarily the teachers of the law and the Pharisees. And so in that suffering, Paul also recognizes that it's worth it. It's worth the suffering compared to the really incomparable glory, whatever that means, that would be showing through simply their faith. And whatever that glory means is beyond words, because that glory is the risen Christ. Christ has already died and suffered for the church. He's also risen for the church, and he's also ascended to heaven for the church. And that is the glory of God that now lives in the hearts of those who live in faith and follow the way of Jesus Christ. That in their true suffering, they truly will be caught up in that glory. That even if they die for their faith, in that suffering, they enter into the glory of God. And that's what is incomparable. We cannot really truly fathom what it is to come truly into that glory of God. But we live in it by faith. And Paul says, you know, if you hope in that alone, that glory will shine through. But don't try and hope on the traditions of what you're trying to do, on the religion of what you're trying to do, on the routines of what you're trying to do, on the securities and the comforts you see all around you that kind of make sense to you. What's the point in hoping in that? Because all you'll end up doing is making it your faith, making it your religion, making it your tradition, and it becomes all about you. It becomes that when you come to that temple, or in this case, when we come to church, what is it I can get out of church for myself? That's not what Jesus taught. He said, my glory and your faith and hope in me will take you way beyond yourself into the spiritualness of this world and the kingdom of heaven. That's where you need to live in relationship with your Father. I'm teaching you, I'm showing you, and I am there with him now. And you too, that's your destiny. That this moment and this time on earth is about your Father. But it is about you as well, because you have a key part to play. That in your suffering, God knows what you are going through. And so they're feeling that pain of growing, the ache for something different to happen, to be stirred up, to change. A hope that they cannot see, and yet a destiny in God. And for that ache and that pain, which God feels too, they can begin to build church the way Jesus Christ had intended it to be. And perhaps the church today is feeling that groaning pain in which we probably got wrapped up in ourselves just a little bit too much recently. It's nobody's fault. It's that humanness in us that we tend to hang on to the tangible things rather than the spiritual things of God. But he knows that. But above all, he knows our heart and that willingness of where we want to be with him as individuals, yet in fellowship as well. And so he calls each one of us, wherever we are, to say, look, I get where you are, but are you willing to let go of some of those things you've built around yourself, some of that religion of faith you've made for you, and let it go and let God come in afresh again, take you by the hand and lead you into places that perhaps you haven't been to a long time, places of excitement, of exploration, of joy, of coming together, strengthening each other in fellowship, prepared then as we gather around that communion with God for a purpose. And that purpose is to be sent out with that joy in our heart that it is so passionate we can't hold it in. There's that glory of God that wants to burst forth and spill out as it meets people where they are, overwhelming them because there's something different going on here that doesn't belong to the world, but that belongs to God. And he's given it as a treasure in heaven with a responsibility to do something with it. So when you were called by God, he said, there you go. Do something with it for me. Do something with it for me. And if one treasure in heaven is worth so much, how much more then when you see a whole church full of treasures and gems? That's how valuable we are to God. So that responsibility today is our service, our suffering, our duty to face the challenges today, to make church not about us, but about the unbelievers. To fill these empty chairs up with people who are coming, not with certainty and hope in their hearts, but to come and say, what is this all about? Who is God? I don't really get that. And we can sit with them and say, yeah, we haven't got the answers either, but we're looking for it. And let's sit together and work together. That's only going to happen if we break away from what probably church has become for us, that safe, comfortable place, and dare to believe not on the possible things, but the impossible things with God, and that he can use you to change somebody's life by introducing them to Jesus Christ by the way you love him in that natural and normal way that perhaps we haven't got the confidence in. So today we're going to explore really where we think we are as a church, okay? And if I start asking each one of you, where do you think we are as a church? You know, you probably want to tell me all the answers that I probably want to hear, but I don't want to hear that. I want you to know in your heart what God already knows about you and let that answer come out. And be honest, be real. That's the only place we can really truly start from. And then to look back in the past and to celebrate that we're here today because of those pillars of our church community that have kept coming, kept that light burning, even in their own sufferings and difficult times. And we're blessed to have Dave Champness, who's come from the diocese, and he's been newly appointed pretty much to champion the vision at a diocesan level. Is that the right way to explain it? And he's here for you guys, so you can ask him questions as well. It's a privilege to have you here amongst us, Dave. And then we're going to look then about where we think our future might be held in God, and to know that each one of us are a part of that, okay? And we all need to participate and get involved in it, wherever you are. So let's just, in that stillness, realize that we're all in it together. And around you, as you look, we need each other. I can't do it on my own. I need each one of you. And I'm hoping I can be part of your journey as well. So I'm wondering why I was going to come and just open up in prayer. And then the worship team are going to just help us stay in that presence with God. Okay, so let's just bow our heads or have you do with God here. To what should I compare myself to a midsummer's day? For I am more beautiful, more temperate. They said this morning, should it be Terry Wogan? Sadly, he passed away this morning. I didn't realise that. Yeah, bit of a shock there, isn't there? Didn't realise he was that ill. But it kind of tells you, doesn't it? Life goes on, doesn't it? It doesn't stop for anybody. And time itself is racing away. It makes us be still, take stock, and see where we truly are. So we're going to ask Finchie, as he's known amongst us, to come and join us. And as he does so, do come and join us. Finch is going to look at an anonymous perspective of where we think we are today. So listen to what he's got to say, as he just mics himself up a little bit there. And then we're going to pan out and just see what you guys think. You know, this is a two-way conversation here this morning. We need to hear from you too, where you think we are. You might agree with Finchie, you might not agree with him. But let's just have that honesty where we're coming from. Do you want some help there? Is everybody receiving Finchie?
Hello.
Yeah, that sounds good. Sounds good. You've been with us, what, about 2.5 years now? Coming up to that?
Yes.
Brilliant. And your lovely wife, where is she? There she is, out there. Of course, is the rock of every good fella.
Yes.
Yeah. So you.
If she weren't here, it would be a different answer, probably.
Ooh. So a bit of honesty already. A good place to start. But you say you're kind of newish to Baxingdon. Mm-hmm. You're not a basher.
No.
But you're trying to fit in. And, of course, you could say you're relatively new to this congregation. Of those who've been coming here perhaps for many years, but you settled in very quickly. What's been your first sort of thoughts about particularly where you think we are?
I feel like I'm the wrong person in the wrong place here, by the way. Cause if I was sitting where you are, I would be saying, who is this geezer who's been here 2 minutes and is telling us where we think we are? But this is a very loving church. There's lots of very loving people here, and I'm sure those who have been ill recently will be testimony to that. We have a strong men's group. We have lots of lovely children. John might disagree with me here, but the more children the merrier for me, the more noise the better. And if you think we haven't so many young children, just pop your head in on a Friday morning. So we've got a good attendance at house groups, but is comfortable really where we want to be? That's where I see, in terms of where we are. But the thing is, the bishop's vision and the mission, the Crossroads mission coming up in September, I think changes the goalposts a little bit in terms of where we measure where we actually are. Because now we've got to consider, are we going to embrace this? are we in a position to take it on board and really make it work in Baxenden? Or are we just going to let this chance pass us by? Because my belief is that the church in general and the Church of England in particular has perhaps failed four, maybe five generations of people. And now we have a chance to put that right. And if we don't take that chance, then shame on us, really. So, yes, it's a lovely, loving church. We're comfortable in many respects. But are we prepared to be uncomfortable for a while and launch into this vision? Because in my lifetime, I don't think there's anything been like this in this diocese. I don't think we've ever had anything so intense and so necessary and yet so exciting. So, if you're asking me to measure us in terms of where we are with the vision and the mission, I would say we're in a different place than comfortable.
So you're
going to ask me where now, aren't you?
In a minute, I will do, actually. It's a really good question. But you said that, are we prepared for the vision? Are we ready to embrace the vision? That there were searching questions. Do you feel we are?
Some people, yes, others, no. I'll try and explain that. I'm a great lover of quiz shows on telly. And it doesn't matter how naff the conception of the quiz show is. If it involves general knowledge questions, I love them. I've got to a stage now where I can perhaps answer two or three during a session of University Challenge. So I'm sort of rising up the ladder. But does anybody watch a show on weekdays called Tipping Point? There you see, there's some nerds about. But if you don't know Tipping Point, it's based on one of these amusement arcade things where you shove a penny in and his arms go across and shove it off, and if you're lucky, it shoves some coins out at the end. Now, the thing is this. On this machine, some of the coins are really dangling over the edge to start with, and they need very little pushing at all. They're just ready to tipple over. Other coins are a little bit farther away than the edge, but they still need very little pushing, just one or two pushes, and they're over. And quite often, some of these coins collect together and get on top of each other, and you get a big clump of coins, and they're right difficult to move and get over. But if you do persevere and manage to get this big clump of coins over, your quid's in and all these coins fall down. But there are also some coins that never move at all, and they're in the same position at the end of the show as they were in at the beginning. And I think most parishes in this diocese will have people that are in these sort of positions, in that there are some people in this church who are just bursting to get going and who want to embrace the mission and the vision and the slightest bit of pushing, they're off. Others need a little bit more pushing. Others are in the clump that are not sure whether they want to go or stay. But if we persevere and they do go, we get a collection of people going over and getting involved and being and embracing it, and we're quids in. There will be those, unfortunately, who don't want to embrace the mission and don't want to get involved with the vision. And unfortunately, they will remain exactly where they are before the vision started. And I don't know whether that analogy's helped at all or not, but that's where I see us in terms of the vision and the mission. And I don't think we're alone in that. I think that's probably where most churches are in this diocese at this moment in time.
So where you consider we are, where do you think we are in our relation with God as we're worshipping community, as a community that is ministering with all its heart, mind, soul, and strength at the heart of our community?
Well, how can we answer that? I mean, it's a personal thing, isn't it? Where we are spiritual, it's a personal thing between one person and God alone, and only those two really can say where they really are. But there is always room for improvement and room to learn and room to get closer to God. No matter at which stage you're at in your Christian journey, there's always a place that you can move to and get closer to God. And we're all in that learning stage. No matter how long or how mature a Christian you are, everybody continues to be in that learning stage. Whether I'm in a position, or you for that matter, Tom, are in a position to say that we are, this is where we are spiritually. We can say where we'd like to be, we can say where we've been, but can we truly say, as a congregation, as a family, this is where we are in this place? We can move forward, we can drop back, and we can say where we want to be, but I don't believe it's our place to question or say where. It wouldn't be my place for me to say, Chris is in this place, William's in that place, I'm a bit above William. You know, that's not right, is it? But God knows where we are. And as a family, we know, but we can set a stall to where we want to be, a position where we want to be.
In our confession, Jesus helps us not to look back and all the things we get wrong, but to leave them behind, to see where we are now and to move forward. Blessed Church, I think sometimes it's just helpful, and actually it's a joy and a privilege to look back on our church history and where we've come from. And there are many folk out there could have asked to come and join me here this morning. But I've plumbed for John. John is also from the 8 o'clock service as well. So I think it's really important to remind ourselves that we are, you know, we're one congregation in which two services help to meet us in our worship. So John, you come and join me on the sofa. John was our church warden, as you remember, last year, passing the mantle on to Finchie. But somebody said the other day about John, he says, John does so much for church, doesn't he? But he works at it in a way that is so humble. And that actually, we don't know what he does most of the time. He just works. And I thought, actually, that's very true. So, John, have to listen to Finchie rambling on about where we are today in that wonderful way that he does. Let's get one back for his missus there. It's really important, isn't it, to acknowledge where we have come from, do you think?
Indeed. We've come a long way, and we've been through a number of cycles, really. We've gone from about 40 years ago, where the place was about to be closed down, right to where we are today, and we've been through peaks and troughs along that journey. One thing that has been constant is the Holy Spirit in this place, and that the help the Holy Spirit's given the people who've been charged with recovering Baxendon as a parish and building it back up. We've sent out 6 people for ordination, and with Joanne making that, I think, a 7th in that short period of time in about 35 years. So that's a significant representation of what God does in this place. We've got our heritage really comes from young families who come to church, have come to church to ensure the children get good education in school, and have stayed with us. And back in the 80s, there were a significant core of families who became very key to the success of this church and this parish, and a lot of them are still here now in church. So we have some constants that have been built up over the years. We've also been recognised as a very welcoming and a very loving place to be, and I think that's reflected still today. It's one of the constants. We have people who worship here, like I do at 8 o'clock, I take on the chin the comment about me and children. I love children. I actually have grandchildren, and I love them to bits. But 8 o'clock's a really lovely service in that you can find that space to be close to God, you can sit quietly, you can reflect and be in communion with God and put yourself right for the following week. And that is one of the key good things that we've done in this place. We have been inclusive for all our members. And whilst the Church of England exists for its non-members, once it's won members, we've got to keep them and nurture them and build on them. We've other good things that have developed over the years. Joyce's Tots Prayers on a Friday is massive. This service has its place and is does really well. And I think we've established some constants, some good things. And what I don't think we've done yet is look at the changing lifestyle that people have. Back in the 80s, we didn't have Sunday shopping. You might have had a supermarket open or a few shops open and a garage open, but you didn't have John Lewis or Trafford Centre or any of those places where people now go instead of coming here. I think people's lives were different, and the pace, whilst it was stressful and busy, was different, and there wasn't the technological distractions of phones, iPads, computers and all the rest. So looking at the constants we've got and looking at the changes, I guess we've got to start looking at how we exploit some of the changes rather than just stay where we are, but build on what we've done well. So we need to be able to identify what we've done right and what's not worked, and rather than getting rid of a lot of things and doing things totally different, build on those things that we've done well and stop doing those things that we haven't done so well. But I think I've been coming here now since the 80s, early 80s, and the constant that I think works for us is love and welcoming, and we need to build on that, so we need to give people who are here now the confidence to be able to go out and be more of a witness.
Brilliant. So you've been here since 1980. Vicars come and go all the time, don't they?
Yes, they do.
But one constant, of course...
just remember that.
But one constant, of course, as you say, is the people, isn't it? This is your church, the community's church, isn't it?
It is, but it's got to be more than a stone box at the top of the hill. Mm-hmm. And that's the worry I've got, is that people out there in our community see these strange people going into this stone box on a Sunday... and don't understand what it's about and perhaps have a fear of coming in the stone box. And that's the challenge for me, is how do we actually be more than just a cold stone box at the top of a hill?
So why do you think, just in a few words, it is important to look back? Because you quite rightly highlighted all the things that have happened, but why is it important to look back?
I think it's important to look back and learn, because God's taught us all sorts of lessons, good, and we've taught ourselves some really bad lessons or done some things that have not worked. So it's important to understand and respect what's gone before and to respect where people are. And I think Finch's comment was absolutely bob on about where we are as a church in our journey. We're all in different places, and you cannot put a label on where this church is. I think you could say we have a number of services which are exciting and interesting, but actually to say where we are in our journeys, everybody's in a different place. Everybody has an individual personal relationship with God. So it's very hard to do that judgment, and it's not us that should be judging. I think in terms of the health of this place, we used to have regularly 150 odd people sat in here every Sunday, and on church parade Sunday, on the first Sunday of the month, we'd have 200 odd, and we'd have to run across for chairs from school because we didn't have all these carpets and heating, and not heating like we have now, and toilets. If somebody wanted a toilet, they had to go across the road. So it's important to remember only 20 odd years ago what this place was like.
Brilliant.
To understand where we need to go to, and I think we need to respect those people who've been coming here. There are a core of people who've been here since before the estates were built. Look at Hilda, you look at Parton Val, Florence, a number of people who have been coming for forever, all their lives they were baptised in this place. And their relationship with God might be, the approach to their relationship with God might be totally different and not necessarily in line with what some modern vicars or people might want to push them into, and I think that needs to be respected because that is their personal relationship with God, which we cannot judge.
Brilliant, thank you. That's good.
Okay.
Yeah, fantastic.